Sherlock Holmes. We present Barry Foster as Sherlock Holmes and David Buck as Dr. Watson in a new dramatization of the short stories by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. The Musgrave Ritual, dramatized by Michael Bakewell, with Martin Jarvis as Reginald Musgrave. An anomaly which often struck me in the character of my friend Sherlock Holmes was that although in his method of thought he was the neatest and most methodical of mankind, he was nonetheless in his personal habits one of the most untidy men that ever drove a fellow lodger to distraction. When I find a man who keeps his cigars in the coal scuttle, his tobacco in the toe end of a Persian slipper, and his unanswered correspondence transfixed by a jackknife in the very center of his wooden mantelpiece, then I know that with me there is a limit. I have always held, too, that pistol practice should distinctly be an open-air pastime, and when Holmes, in one of his queer humors, would sit in an armchair with his hair trigger and 100 Boxer cartridges, and proceed to adorn the opposite wall with a patriotic VR done in bullet pox, I felt strongly that neither the atmosphere nor the appearance of our room was improved by it.
Is something troubling, Watson? You seem to lack your customary equanimity.
My dear Holmes, if you have nothing with which to occupy yourself for the next 2 hours, do you not think we might spend the time in making our room a little more habitable? There's hardly a chair I can sit in. Your papers have not been cleared for months. You allow me to burn nothing. Nothing can be thrown away. Could we not at least introduce a little order?
I cannot deny the justice of your request, Watson. So, let us make a start. With the old tin box in my bedroom. Now, you have no idea what is contained in here, Watson. This is my department of antiquities.
Ah, the records of your early work.
Yes, my boy. And these were all done before you came on the scene. Here's the record of the Tarleton murders and the singular affair of the aluminium crutch. Oh. And here. Yes. This is something really a little recherché.
What do you make of that, Watson?
Crumpled piece of paper. A ball of string with a peg of wood attached to it, and three rusty old discs of metal. Curious collection.
Very curious. And the story that hangs round it will strike you as more curious still. Those relics are all that I have left to remind me of the episode of the Musgrave Ritual.
I should be glad if you could give me an account of it, Holmes.
Well, then, leave the litter where it is. Your tidiness won't bear much strain after all, Watson.
Well, be that as it may.
Very well. Musgrave had been in the same college as myself, and I had some slight acquaintance with him. When I first came to London, most of my cases were from fellow students, for during my last years at university, there was a good deal of talk about myself and my methods.
No doubt.
Reginald Musgrave was not generally popular among the undergraduates, though it always seemed to me that what was set down as pride was really an attempt to cover extreme natural diffidence.
Yes.
In appearance, he was a man of exceedingly aristocratic type, thin, high-nosed, and large-eyed. with languid yet courtly manners. He was indeed a scion of one of the very oldest families in the kingdom, which at some time in the 16th century had established itself in western Sussex, and whose manor house of Hurlston is perhaps the oldest inhabited building in the country. And something of his birthplace seemed to cling to the man, and I never looked at his pale, keen face or the poise of his head without associating him with grey archways and mullioned windows and all the venerable wreckage of a feudal keep.
Whose was it, his who is gone? Who shall have it, he who will come? What was the month, the sixth from the first? Where was the sun? Over the oak. Where was the shadow? Under the elm. How was it stepped? North by 10 and by 10, east by 5 and by 5, south by 2 and by 2, west by 1 and by 1, and so under. What shall we give for it, all that is ours? Why should we give it for the sake of the trust? And that's it, Holmes. Just gibberish.
Most interesting. And you had to learn it by heart for your coming of age.
Like our catechism, Holmes. It was a proper ceremony. Every Musgrave has gone through it for centuries.
And it was the manuscript of the ritual which you found in the hands of your butler.
Yes. It came as quite a shock, I can tell you. Brunton had been in service with us for years. He was at Hurlston in my father's time. It's a rambling old place and takes a good deal of looking after. I have to keep up a considerable staff of servants, and, well, after my poor father's death, I'd come to rely on Brunton to take charge of things.
Mm-hmm.
He was a remarkable fellow. He could speak several languages and play every musical instrument.
Really?
He was the one thing about Hurlston that visitors remembered.
And did he have no faults, this paragon?
One fault, certainly. He was a bit of a Don Juan. Since his wife died, we've had no end of trouble with him. We had high hopes that he might settle down with Rachel Howells, our second housemaid. But he threw her over and took up with the daughter of our head gamekeeper. Rachel was a good girl, but she was excitable. A Welsh temperament, I suppose. And after Brunton threw her over, she seemed to take on a touch of brain fever. Wandered about the house like a black-eyed shadow of her former self.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least she did, until yesterday.
I think you had best tell me precisely what happened.
Well, it was one night last week. Thursday night, to be more exact. I couldn't sleep, having foolishly taken a cup of café noir after dinner. At the time, I decided I would fetch a novel which I'd left in the billiard room. As I said, it's a rambling old place. And to reach the billiard room, I had to descend a flight of stairs and cross the head of a passage which led to the library and gun room.
Yes.
You can imagine my surprise when I looked down the corridor and saw a glimmer of light from the open door of the library. And I took down one of the old family statuettes in the wall and crept on tiptoe down the passage to peep in at the open door. Brunton was fully dressed. I saw him unlock a drawer of the bureau where the old family documents are kept and take out a slip of paper which he began to study with minute attention. My indignation so far overcame me that I took a step forward into the room.
Brunton!
Mr. Reginald.
So, this is how you repay the trust we have reposed in you. What have you got there? Give me that paper, man.
The Musgrave ritual? What possible importance can that have for you?
Mr. Reginald, my insatiable curiosity may have led me...
No explanation can excuse your behavior, Brunton. You will leave my service tomorrow.
Mr. Reginald, sir. I can't bear disgrace, sir.
You leave me no alternative.
I've always been proud about my station in life, sir. And disgrace would kill me.
Now, look here, Brunton.
My blood will be on your head, sir. It will indeed, if you drive me to despair. If you cannot keep me after what has passed, then, for God's sake, let me give you notice and leave in a month, as if of my own free will.
You don't deserve such consideration, Brunton. Your conduct has been most infamous. However, as you have been a long time in the family, I have no wish to bring public disgrace upon you. Take yourself away in a week and give what reason you like for going.
A week, sir? A fortnight? Say, at least a fortnight.
A week. And you may consider yourself to have been leniently done to it. For the next 2 days, Holmes, Brunton was most assiduous in his attention to his duties. On the third morning, however, he didn't appear, as was his custom after breakfast, to receive my instructions for the day.
Ah.
As I left the breakfast room, I happened to see Rachel Howells, the maid.
Good morning, Mr. Musgrave, sir.
Rachel, you should be in bed. You're pale and tired, and in no state for work. Come back to your duties when you're stronger.
I'm strong enough, Mr. Musgrave.
Well, we shall see what the doctor says. You must stop work now. And when you go downstairs, just say that I want to see Brunton.
Brunton's gone.
Gone? Gone where?
He's gone. No one has seen him. Nothing's true. Oh, yes, he's gone. He's gone.
Well, the girl was taken to her room, still screaming and sobbing, while I made inquiries about Brunton. There was no doubt about it that he had disappeared. And yet it was difficult to see how he could have left the house, as all the windows and doors were found to be fastened.
Did you send for the police?
Of course, but well, they could find nothing. Rain had fallen during the night, but there were no tracks on the path for lawn.
I see.
But the strangest is still to come, Holmes. On the third night after Bunter's disappearance, the nurse, who took the watch over Rachel House, found her patient's bed empty. Footmarks led from under her window across the lawn to the mare. The water there is 8 feet deep, and you can imagine our feelings when we saw that the tale of the poor, demented girl came to an end there. And you know, we found nothing. No trace of the body. The only thing we brought to the surface was a linen bag, which contained a mass of rusted and dirty metal and a few dull-coloured pieces of pebble and glass. Well, what do you make of it all, Holmes? I'd heard that you turned your methods of deduction to professional use.
Yes, I suspect you've been living by my wits.
So you used to astound us all at university. I thought you might be able to throw some light on the matter. You can't you believe that there were ten?
Well, a most extraordinary sequence of events.
Indeed.
Problem. Find the common thread on which they all hang. Now, let us go back to the starting point. The Musgrave Whisper was a title. Do you have a copy of it?
Yes, I have one here. But it can be of no importance. Sorry, it's a kind of family game.
What is the date of the original document?
There is no date, but the writing and spelling are those of the mid-17th century.
You will excuse me, Musgrave. I say that your butler appears to have been a very clever man and to have had a clearer insight than 10 generations of Musgraves.
Oh. Well, paper seems to me of no practical importance.
But it seems to me to be immensely practical, and I fancy that Brunton took the same view.
But what could he have to do with this old family custom of ours? And what does this rigmarole mean?
I don't think that we should have much difficulty in determining that. With your permission, we will take the first train down to Sussex and go a little more deeply into the matter at Hurlston Manor. Oh, and by the way, I shall need a line of string and some wooden pegs.
There's the mare. Behind the trees, over there. You see, really quite close to the house.
Aye. How old is Hurlston?
Well, there's an inscription on the lintel of the door in the centre which says 1607. But some of the house is much older than that. 15th century, probably. It may well be the oldest inhabited building in the county.
That magnificent oak tree. Now, that was there when your ritual was drawn up.
It was there at the Norman Conquest, in all probability. It has a girth of 23 feet.
Get your man to stop a minute, would you?
Oh, Gilpin, we want to stop here.
Now then, if that really is the oak referred to in the ritual, it should give us one of our fixed points. Have you any old elms?
There used to be a very old one over yonder, but it was struck by lightning 12 years ago, and we cut down the stump.
But you can see what it used to be.
I can show you now, if you care to step down.
Huh.
It's over this way.
I suppose it's impossible to find out how high the elm tree was.
I can give it to you at once. It was 64 feet.
What? But how do you come to know that?
Whenever my old tutor used to give me an exercise in trigonometry, it always took the shape of measuring heights. When I was a lad, I worked out every tree and building on the estate.
Tell me, did your butler ever ask you such a question?
What? Well, now that you call it to my mind, Brunton did ask me about the height of the tree some months ago, in connection with some little argument with the groom.
Excellent.
then we are on the right track.
Now, this is the very spot. The old elm stood here.
Midway between the oak and the house. And in less than an hour, the sun should lie just above the topmost branches of the old oak tree. That should fulfill one of the conditions of the ritual.
I really fail to see what you're driving at, Holmes.
Where was the shadow? Under the elm. That must mean the farther end of the shadow, otherwise the trunk would have been chosen as guide. So all we have to find out is where the shadow would fall when the sun is just clear of the oak.
But that's impossible, Holmes.
Not at all. Such a simple calculation. All I need is a 6-foot measure.
Well, we've a fishing rod in the house. Would one of those do?
Excellent. I'll get the line and the wooden peg. Now then, the sun is just grazing the top of the oak. If you would be so good as to hold the rod upright, my sir.
Very well.
I will mark out the direction of the shadow and measure it.
Of course. But really, Holmes, I still don't see.
9 feet.
I mean, what possible connection can this have with the sun?
So, if a rod of 6 feet throws a shadow of 9 feet, a tree of 64 feet should throw a shadow of 96 feet. Come on, Musgrave. I need you to help measure the ground.
93, 94, 95, 96.
Right. Put our peg there as a marker. Have a look. You see, Musgrave, that little depression in the ground? That's where Brunton put his marker.
Ah.
We are on his trail. Right, now for the stepping. Mercifully, I never travel without a compass. What does your ritual say?
North by 10 and by 10.
So, 10 steps with each foot to the north.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
There. Mark it with our pick, if you please. Now?
East. By 5 and by 5.
5 steps with each foot to the east.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
All right. And now?
South. By 2 and by 2.
2 and 2. Which brings us to this old door. And west. By 1 and 1, but I don't understand it. There must be some mistake. There's nothing here. These paving stones haven't been touched for generations. Nothing. No sign of a crack and no sign of Brunton's work either.
I say you've forgotten the under, Holmes.
What's that?
Now, the ritual continues, and so under.
Ah. I assumed that meant you were to dig. There's a cellar here, then, is there?
Oh, yes. It's one of the oldest parts of the house. Shall we go down?
We always keep a lantern here. Wait while I light it. We use the cellar for storing wood. Oh, the wood's been moved to clear a space in the middle. And this is what the ritual pointed to. This flagstone has an old iron ring in it.
Right there, that's Brunton's muffler around it. What has the scoundrel been up to?
We shall know soon enough, I fancy. Oh, stone will not budge. I shall need your help, Musgrave.
Oh, yes.
Go on! Right! It's a small chamber. Shine your lantern over here, Musgrave. My God. It's Brunton. He must have been dead for several days.
What's that he's holding on to?
It's a box of some sort. It seems to be empty. I think we'd better send for the police. Once they've removed the body, we can try to get to the bottom of this strange business.
I see no rhyme or reason in it, Holmes. There were no wounds or bruises on the body.
The problem does, I admit, seem more formidable than when we first started. Now then, let us put ourselves in Brunton's place. The ritual led him to the stone with the iron ring in it.
He knew that something of great value was concealed down there, but the stone was too heavy for him to move it by himself. The two of us could hardly manage it. So what could he do next? He could scarcely get help from outside. There was only one person he could ask. Rachel Howells.
Oh, but he'd abandoned her.
Man always finds it hard to believe that he's lost a woman's love, however badly he's treated her. Somehow or other, he made his peace with her, and they came down together at night to raise the stone. Now, let us see if we can find any evidence of their efforts.
Well, I can see nothing here. You've blocked the wood.
Ah, but look here. You see, this piece has a marked indentation at one end. And look at these. They're flattened at the sides as if they'd been compressed by some heavy weight.
You mean they used them as wedges?
Exactly. As they dragged the stone up, they thrust these chunks of wood into the gap until it was big enough for Brunton to crawl into. Now here, give me a hand with the stone. Let's try and get it back into place. Over the hole. More. Now let's hold it up with this billet here. You see? Just room for a man to get in. The girl must have waited above. Brunton then unlocked the box, handed up the contents, presumably, since we found no trace of them. And then, what happened? Something like that, I fancy. The stone fell back into place and Brunton was trapped in a living tomb. And was it chance that the wood slipped? Or did some smoldering fire of vengeance spring up in her passionate Celtic woman's soul when she saw the man who had wronged her perhaps more than we suspected, in her power?
Of course, her hysterical laughter. She was pale and shaken and more than a little mad. But what was in the box?
That's the mystery.
Well, there were a few old coins encrusted into the bottom of it. A hoard of some sort, you
think? No, that would scarcely account for the family ritual. It must have been the contents of that linen bag which you dragged up from the mere.
Yeah, but that was just old metal and pebbles. It was worthless.
I think we should look at it a little more carefully.
It's in the library. We can have a drink at the same time. I need one after this beastly business.
Oh, there you are, Hams. I hope you can make something of it.
Ah. The metal's almost black.
Here's one of the old coins I found in the bottom of the box. Hey, we were right in fixing our date for the ritual. It's a coin of Charles I.
Yes, of course. And I can see why you regarded this of no importance, but I'm not so sure. The stones are dull, certainly, but let's polish one up a little. There. Now, you see, it glows like a spark. And as for the metal, well, it's so bent and twisted, hard to tell, but it seems to have been in the shape of a double ring.
But what on earth could it have been, Holmes?
And you must bear in mind that the royal party made headway in England even after the execution of the king, and that when they at last fled, they probably left many of their most precious possessions buried behind them, with the intention of returning for them in more peaceful times.
My ancestor, Sir Ralph Musgrave, was a prominent cavalier and the right-hand man of Charles II in his wanderings in exile.
Ah, indeed. Well, now, I think that should give us the last link we wanted. I must congratulate you on coming into possession, though in rather a tragic manner, of a relic of great intrinsic value, but of even greater importance as an historical curiosity.
What is it, then?
It is nothing less than the ancient crown of the kings of England.
The crown? That?
Precisely. Consider what the ritual says. Whose was it? His who is gone. That was after the execution of Charles. And then, who shall have it? He who will come. That was Charles II, whose restoration was already foreseen. There can, I think, be no doubt that this battered and shapeless diadem once encircled the brows of the royal Stuarts.
What an extraordinary
And how was it that King Charles II did not get his crown when he returned?
Ah, there you lay your finger upon the one point we shall probably never be able to clear up.
Oh.
It's likely that the Musgrave who held the secret died in the interval and by accident left the ritual to his descendants without ever explaining the meaning of it.
I see.
From that day onwards, it was handed down from generation to generation until at last it came within the reach of a man who tore its secret out of it and lost his life in the venture.
And the woman, what became of her?
Nothing more was heard of her, Watson. Though the probability is that she got away out of England.
Oh. And the crown?
Oh, they have that down at Helston. Though they had some legal bother and a considerable sum to pay before they were allowed to retain it. I kept these little pieces of metal as a souvenir of it. And now, Watson, shall we see what we can do about clearing up some of these papers?
That was Barry Foster as Sherlock Holmes and David Buck as Dr. Watson in The Musgrave Ritual by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell. Reginald Musgrave was played by Martin Jarvis, Brunton by Graham Weston, and Rachel Howells by Hedley Nichols. The play was directed in our Birmingham studios by Roger Pine.